dreaming of a white crew cab, just like the one my uncle drove, where the chrome wheels glisten and grown men listen to hear those V8s in the snow. Power out.
TBTL.
Hey, TBTL.
Okay, no sounds, no sounds. Just words. No, I need words, not silence. Just give me words. I need words. That's how I communicate.
Don't bully me, all right? I can't take it. I was cyberbullied within an inch of my life last night.
I just want to use my muscles and my mind and open up shop right here and be your number one guy using my muscles and my mind.
Mm. Well, you sure don't talk like a machine.
Sooner or later, gentlemen, you will eat your words. You can't be that overly confident, really.
Never, baby, never.
You might eat that mic.
TBTL.
All right, Rudog. It's time to do this. Rudy, it's October 1st. A blessed Trucktober to you and yours right here, right now, on a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL.
Trucktober!
The show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This party is going to be off the hook.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. A rainy, gloomy Monday, the first day of October. I feel we are now entering the wet and sort of dark season here in the Northwest. It'll be this way for about the next, I don't know, 9 to 10 months. Let's try to get through it together. It's episode 2739 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Lots of news from the weekend to catch you up on. Personal news, I did my little half marathon in Winthrop, Washington. It's beautiful over there. You know where it's not raining right now? Winthrop, Washington. 300 sunny days a year, I hear. Also, let's see. Oh, a guy in Arizona is having to pay $100,000 in cash and $500 a month for the next 20 years because of a gender reveal party gone awry.
It was literally a major disaster.
We will tell you what happened. We'll talk a little bit about these gender reveal events that people are getting into. Also, of course, it is a Monday, so that means we have got a TBTL no point conversion.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
I mean, as our friend Stu from Internet said, we could do 4 hours today just on either the Cleveland Browns game against the Raiders or the Seattle Seahawks against the Arizona Cardinals, mostly because of the craziness of Earl Thomas literally flipping the team off as he gets carted off the field with a broken leg. That was like one of nine bizarre plot points in the show. But anyway, we will do our best to save the sports talking for the no-point conversion at the very end of the show. For those of you who don't love sports talk, we'll stick to non-sports topics. Just powered a few grapes down and almost gave one to Rudy and then Googled, can dogs eat grapes? And no, they can't. Very dangerous. And I'm glad I Googled that. I tried to eat the grapes before we started recording because when we were at TBTL night at the Mariners the other night, I was talking to a listener who mentioned that he stopped listening to the show for, I believe it was 2.5 years because I was eating Skittles on the air. And Lord knows, we don't need to drive away any listeners on this program, so I'm trying to be thoughtful about our listeners who have misophonia. Anyway, let's get the longest-running Cobro on the show. He's like the coolest person I've ever met. Known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their magity. Magity? Can that be a word? I'm into that. I literally just, like, warged out of my body right then. I don't know why. My body is a hurting unit today, by the way. Everything is sore. But it's a good sore because, you know, I got sore from running that half marathon. But I don't know what's going on. But I just, for some reason, I just said the word magedy, like that's a thing. Anyway, he's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us now.
That's a tuna, bro!
From the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my co-brogan.
Hey, man, I have good news for you. This is breaking news, just hitting my email box. We were...
TVTL breaking news.
We spent a lot of money on this sounder, and we got to use it. Right now, every time we use it, we're getting about $6,000 a spin, and we're trying to get that number down. So
right, absolutely. Eventually, after 4 million episodes, it really pays for itself.
Yep. That's right.
Listen, I'm not even going to do this
half
setup
of its
for
value
this.
As soon as you drive it off the lot.
Yeah, that's what they say.
The annoying part.
I know. You know, no backstory. I'm just going to tell you straight out, Luke. You can probably fly shirtless. That's what the breaking news is. We're talking about this. I don't even know how the topic came up. I think on Friday's show, Thursday's show, we're talking about it. It would be funny if you just, as I believe you put it, Iggy popped your way.
The world needs to see the madness that is my upper torso. Okay?
Oh, right. That's right. We were talking. It was Thursday. You had to make your way down to Portland. We had this whole conversation about... messing up your shirt on your way down there, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I said maybe you'd go shirtless, maybe just shirtless with a sport coat. And we said there's probably rules against that. But I got this note from Nate. He says that he's a regional flight attendant, and he contracts with Alaska and other airlines. Recalling my sensitivity training, I'm 95% sure that Alaska Airlines is the only airline that does allow shirtless male passengers. I think it has to do with Native American religion or tradition. So if you decide to do that, you could potentially board an Alaska flight that way. That's from
that
listener Nate.
Consider me dazzled by that detail. That's incredible. And that would be, I mean, it's the first I'm hearing of it, but that would be, I guess, the only, that would be a semi-reasonable explanation. Alaska Airlines flies to a lot of places that have, you know, Native Americans and First Nations people, and that maybe there's some sort of cultural, religious thing going on with that.
Even knowing that, even, you know, you and I, we try to be sensitive to other people, other culture, the other beliefs, other traditions. I'm not 100% sure that I would love sitting next to a topless guy on a flight.
How much money would I need to pay you for you to fly topless?
For me to fly topless? I have a doctor's appointment with a new doctor on Thursday of this week, and I'm already trying to figure out if there's a way I can have them remove moles from my chest without me taking off my shirt.
I have a mole on the back of my neck that I'm such a weirdo. It's kind of unsightly, and I want to get it removed. But I asked the doctor, and I was going to have to make another appointment. I don't think it's covered by insurance because it's not a medical issue.
Yeah.
It's sort of cosmetic. And so for some reason, I didn't grow up going to the doctor very much, right? I won't bore everybody with another tale of my hardscrabble youth, but we just weren't a family. We didn't have health insurance, and we didn't go to the doctor a lot. I still find it mildly weird. And I say this like I'm the weird one, but it's like if, you know, carry comes from people that if you're sick or if you're not feeling well or if you're injured in some way, you go see a medical professional and they help with that.
That's my wife.
And that's really the way it should be. But I kind of think that's a little bougie myself. I just have a lot of weird stuff around. Like if I went to the doctor, if I didn't have insurance and I had to go to the doctor and get a checkup, if you told me that cost $33,000, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably how much that costs.
Right.
Like, yeah. I was raised thinking that any medical intervention was in the millions of dollars. This was my parents, I think, wanted me to believe that, so then there'd be less pressure on them to take us to see medical professionals. So anyway, I don't know how much it is to have this mole removed. I'm sure it's probably $100. And well worth it, because then I would not have this unsightly mole on the back of my neck. But instead of just setting up an appointment to do that, I Googled, can you remove a mole yourself at home? Which is grisly work.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. But you can, and I might. It will be hashtag content.
It's on the back of your neck?
I can assure you that. Yeah, it's on the back of my neck. But it's more like a skin tag. I'm sorry. I started the show by saying I'm trying to be thoughtful to the people who don't like to hear me eating on the air. But now, what about the people who don't like to hear the word skin tag?
I know. But
we just
my
lost
thing
another
is,
couple listeners for a year or two off of that one.
Try this. Try saying skin tag while eating a Skittle. See if that brings anybody back. If it's on the back of your... Genevieve is very much into, I guess, what I would call, you know, like bathroom surgeries on herself.
Home medicine?
Yes. And so, you know, I am pretty... squeamish when it comes to stuff like that. I don't like to do that myself. And I think that she thinks I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to that. But I am going to the doctor. I seem to have a bunch of I'm going to keep on calling them moles, but you were more accurate with your term. I don't know why I just suddenly have this outbreak, and it's concerning. So I'm going to the doctor. I'm going to say, you know, take them all off. But I also have a bunch of moles and stuff that have been around for a long time, and I'm wondering if the doctor is going to take those off as well. Like, hey, while I'm in here, why not just keep on grabbing? But then that raised the question, you know what I look like, right? Can you picture my face? Can you just close your eyes and picture my face for a moment since we're not in the same room? How's that going?
All I can see is an angry, yelling Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, you got it. I just shaved, and that's what I look like. You know how I have a receding hairline, and on the right side of my face, to your left, up kind of above, high up on my forehead, I have two prominent moles. Have you noticed those?
Yes, I think I have.
Yeah, see, but that's very telling because this is where I'm going with it. I was telling Genevieve and some other people, I'm like, you know, I never go into the doctor to have stuff like this done. And now that I've been pushed to a point where I clearly need, you know, a doctor to take care of some of this business for me, I'm like, maybe once I'm in there, I should just say, you know, like, just go to town. Like, what about these moles on the top of my head? Like, I think they're becoming a kind of a distinct feature of my head, and I'm trying to figure out if I should just, like, get those removed as well while I'm having the conversation. Now, chances are, it's a different process. You know,
while they've got the car up on the lift.
Right, exactly.
They might as well just, you know, knock those out. I had a mole removed from from the area that I knew would eventually be my bald spot.
Right. That's kind
of
what this is. These were covered
very
by hair.
Thing.
Yeah. These used to be actually kind of my my measurement of how bad my hair was receding because both of these moles were covered by hair at one point in my life. One was right at the hairline, but then as my hairline receded, almost like markings on the side of a swimming pool if you were draining a swimming pool, they were kind of like a marker of how badly I was losing my hair. And now I'm kind of like, hey, I should maybe get rid of these, but they also are kind of I don't know. I never really thought about my face in this way, but now I'm thinking, well, are they kind of a part of my face? Are they part of my look? Not that I have a good look, but are they part of my look? And I wanted some insight from Genevieve, and I quizzed some friends on it as well. Nobody would go on the record as to whether or not I should get them taken off or not. Everybody's like, it's your face. Do what you want.
Because, I mean, it's a dangerous topic.
It is.
Because if somebody, you know, if Genevieve says, oh, yeah, you got to get that taken off, it's a possibility that could kind of mildly hurt your feelings. But maybe she kind of wouldn't mind not having to look at them. And so it's a delicate topic.
I know, but I would think with her that she would be frank. Because let me put it this way. Genevieve is frank with me on a lot of stuff. And in this case, it's sometimes stuff that I'm not even asking for frankness on. Often stuff I'm not asking for frankness on. In this case, I was saying, like, listen, just tell me. Just let me know. Like, if it were up to you. She's like, you mean if they were on my face? I'm like, no, they're on my face. But if you were taking me in, excuse me, if you were taking me in, not unlike a car, and you were getting the tires rotated, would you have these dents banged out as well? Like, would you do it? And she's like, I won't answer that. So I don't know. Maybe yes.
That was the right response from her.
Yeah. I wouldn't have taken it personally.
Yeah, I think I should probably, as much as it would be entertaining content on the show, I think I should probably have a medical professional deal with it. I had a bad experience.
Oh, the one on the back of your neck. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, though, wouldn't it be really hard to remove something from the back of your neck anyway? Wouldn't you have to bring in reinforcements like Carrie and potentially Rudy and Olive?
Well, I definitely would need to get some mirrors involved. Mm. But I've had... I'm pretty squeamish about doing, as you call it, bathroom surgery. The closest I got to that was I pierced my friend's ear when we were in high school, and it did not go well.
Mm. Did he know you were going to do it?
Yeah, there was consent.
Okay.
And we did the whole thing with, like, we iced it. And I remember this vividly. It was my friend Matt Smith, and we were sitting on my parents' bed, as you do, as teenage boys piercing each other's ears.
Sure.
sitting on my parents' bed for some reason. And this isn't a story, by the way. This isn't like this isn't turned into Call Me By Your Name or anything. But it certainly had some indications it might be going in that direction. So we I iced his ear. And then I had some earring, I guess. This was not my idea, for the record. But the earring was – like I think the one – the earring they pierce your ear with at the piercing pagoda in the mall is like obviously designed. It's sharp. It's they have a gun for it. Like it's a whole system. This had none of those things going for it. And so I remember starting to – apologies if this is a little gross. But I remember starting to, you know, push the earring through his ear. And it was not like a hoop or anything. It was kind of like a – I don't know how to describe it, but it was a kind of a flat thing, and then it just had a big post coming off the back. That's what I was trying to push through his ear. And it kind of was about halfway through, and clearly we had not iced his ear long enough because he reflexively was trying to crawl away from me backwards on my parents' bed. And I was like – at this point –
You caught a fish. You got a fish on the line. Don't let
exactly.
it go.
I was pot –
It's a tuna, bro.
I was pot committed, as we say in poker. And so I remember as he's involuntarily scooching back away from me, I'm voluntarily crawling on top of him now, pinning him down with my knees, pinning him down by his shoulders, and pressing this thing which will not go through his ear. Again, what is it? $7 to get your ear pierced? This is where the story should have ended. It should have been, yeah, this didn't work. Let's drive to Northgate Mall. That should have been the end of the story, but something possessed me, and I just gave it a tremendous last push, and with a incredibly loud snap, it pushed through. And I swear, his ear looked like a cartoon character. It was throbbing. It was throbbing, and it was at least five times the normal size. I don't think he left the earring in very long. It was a complete and total failure on every level and painful for him and traumatizing to me. And this is why I'm going to pay $100 to have my mole removed.
Now, is this the same kid who you broke his tooth by throwing a remote control at him?
No, that was Peter Williams.
Okay, good.
Noted Seattle cellist.
Because Peter Williams put up with a lot of shit from you. And if this was also him,
he really
that would
did.
Have been a problem.
Peter Williams was my Andrew and I was his Tony.
Yes. Tony being my friend growing up, who's kind of one of my only friends, but also a guy who, he was the leader of the pack, and also I followed him some places I shouldn't follow him. Or maybe he pushed me in some places maybe I shouldn't have been pushed.
Yeah, so that's just an update on mine and Andrew's mole situation.
Yeah, let me know. Write in if you have any suggestions for our moles. Sure. And meanwhile, actually, though, here we are. We're already 18 minutes in. I wanted to hear about your adventures this weekend. You had an adventurous weekend with your run and everything. Should we break and come back to it?
Yes, that's a good idea. Let's do that. We'll take a quick break, come back. I'll tell you how that went, and we'll do some top stories and a whole bunch of other stuff. Don't go anywhere. It's TBTL. I feel like Ben Gibbard would be a good cuddler.
Yeah.
He has that. He seems like a sensitive soul.
Yeah, I think you're right. He probably is a great cuddler. This isn't him, though. This is actually Sammy and the Skin Tags singing their famous song, Don't Freeze Me, Bro.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Sounds a lot. I hear why you thought it was Death Cab, though. So how was your run, buddy?
Our friend Barry from Broadcast Coffee was there as well. He ran in the half marathon. He won
what?
The event. He finished
what?
In first place. And,
show off?
And like, I'll show off much. And then I saw him after the race. We watched a football game together. And I said, did you know you were going to win? He goes, no, I didn't. He goes, I mean, I did win it a couple years ago. And I was like, what? Well, if you won it already, like this is the second time you've won this race. If you won it a couple years ago, then yeah, you might have had an indication that you were going to win this one, too. It was quite impressive.
Yeah, no kidding. And did he, like, lord it over you? Like, what was that like watching the ball game?
Yeah, incessantly.
That's, I don't like that.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
it was a lot of pressure.
How did you do it, though? How did you like it? Because you kind of joined this last minute, as a quick reminder to everybody. Like,
yeah.
You decided with less time than most people would to run a half marathon, and you were kind of concerned about how much training and stuff you were able to do ahead of time.
I have to say, I was very happy with the outcome. I ran it. I wanted to do it in under 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 4 hours for a real marathon is sort of a cutoff point that I think some – well, in my mind anyway, if you can do a marathon in under 4 hours, that's pretty dang impressive. And I can't do that. So at least the one time I tried, I didn't do it in under 4 hours. And so what I would like to do is do a half marathon in under 2 hours, which feels kind of like, you know, a version of that. And so, and the weather was perfect. It was just kind of, it was cloudy, but not raining. And the temperature was perfect. And, it was great. Now the one thing, so I think I did it in like an hour and 53 minutes and change, which
nice.
I was personally very satisfied with. Remember how I bored the listeners on Friday, playing selections of music that I was going to be playing on my run, and my whole strategy about what song was going to happen when I needed, you know, a little boost of energy.
Yeah. Got some good feedback on that, actually. Thought it was fun.
Well, it was all for naught because what happened ultimately is I couldn't find my AirPods. I could not find my headphones.
What?
And I thought I'd left them at home. I thought, oh, you got to be kidding me. I cannot believe I did this. It turns out I had not left them at home. They were in the pocket of a sweater I had been wearing the day we drove over. And I found them this morning when I put the sweater back on. So that's hilarious. But so our friend Brianne, who we were staying with over in Winthrop, she said, because she was going to do the race and then at the last minute decided not to. And so she said, well, I've got these like Bluetooth headphones that you can borrow. And I was like, oh, great. Now, it was going to mean that I'd have to carry my phone because they couldn't talk to my watch. But still, I was like, okay, this will be great. I'll have some music. So I take the phone and I take these headphones and I start the race. And I cannot for the life of me get the phone to talk to the headphones.
Yeah.
So now I'm just – this is the worst case scenario. I'm now just jogging along with these fairly robust – they're like the kind that are connected. They're not like AirPods. They like have their own
– yeah.
Like string that's connecting the two of them that goes on the back of your neck,
yeah.
Right in mole country. you know, so I'm like carrying them. I'm carrying the phone. I have no music. But you know what? It ended up being kind of nice. I really liked the moment of like hearing the right song at the right time. But I traded that for hearing the birds chirp and listening to the river flow. And it was its own kind of a fun thing. So I don't know what I'll do next. If I do another one of these, I'll probably wear my headphones. But it wasn't terrible. So that was good. And I was, you know, I actually felt less tired than I expected to feel. And it all turned out okay. I was pretty happy with it. I'm glad I made myself do it.
How often do you run without having any kind of music in your ears?
Never.
See, that's
never,
huge
ever.
To me that like, you always do it. I mean, that's a huge part of the process.
Well, I mean, honestly, I would typically not go running if I couldn't, like, if I weren't able to have my little tunes, I would probably say I'm not going to run today, which is kind of silly. And I've had like my headphones die or I've had my phone die in the middle of a run, but I'm pretty attached to the whole musical soundtrack thing. But this was just, you know, I mean, there was no getting around it. I will say that it felt. I noticed, you know, I was very present on the run. I noticed my breathing, which, you know, real runners, like people that are hardcore, most of them don't wear headphones because, like, my ex-wife was, like, a serious marathoner, and she ran every day of her life pretty much, and it would never crossed her mind to listen to music. That's kind of like – that's sort of like a – you know, that's a thing with really serious runners, I think. Most of them don't wear headphones. I need to distract myself usually as much as possible. So, anyway, yeah, but I was happy that it all worked out and I finished and I didn't get a big, I got one thing was I started to get a huge blister on my big toe, but it was towards the end of the race. I also started to get what I thought was maybe the beginning of a side ache. I realized I don't get like side aches are a really big part of, childhood, right? Don't you feel like you were getting side aches a lot as a kid?
No, but I wonder if that was just because, I mean, maybe like when I was on the football team or whatever and I had to run more than I was supposed to. But yeah, I was just like kind of a fat kid out there trying to do exercise. That
a little turd out there?
Just like a little turd out there, yeah. So is that what you're talking about, or do you just mean even just playing around?
Yeah. No, I mean like doing exercise stuff, whether it was team sports or like running, if you had to run in gym class. I just remember always getting side aches, and that was a big, it felt like it was a big topic of conversation. I don't know if that had something to do with like the physical development as a kid of, you know, like your body is, you're growing, and maybe kids legitimately get more side aches, or maybe I was just out of shape or what, but
Seaver's
disease. Yeah, major growing pains disease. But I like halfway through, I started to feel what I thought was the beginnings of a side ache, and I was like, oh, no. But then I was like, not today, Satan, and then just went away, and then I was fine.
Well, I'm looking for the results. I wanted to see the results page where you fit in there, but I found the website, but it is down. I can't get in. What? I wonder if you know, the Winthrop Marathon and Half Marathon site has fallen to hackers. Somebody who is maybe embarrassed or is maybe inflating their time on a podcast and doesn't want
well,
me to know the truth.
Well, I think you'd be deflating your time, probably.
Or I guess deflating, for sure.
Yeah, I'm noticing that, too. They use some weird third-party thing to sign you up. And so I think that maybe that's part of the problem. Who knows?
I think I'm going to do this. I choose to believe you.
I think I'm going to do this again next year.
Great.
I did have one little moment, which is when I with this race, which it was great. I really enjoyed it, and I think I'm going to try to do it next year. But I went to sign up for it a week ago, and it said the half marathon was full, but there's a waiting list. You can get on the waiting list if you want. And then it said, so I freaked out. I was like, oh man, it's full. So then there was like 20 spots left for the full. So I just paid for the full, which was more money. And I said, well, I'll just pay for the full, but I'll only do the half marathon because I just wanted to have a spot. I wanted to have a number assigned to me for the race. And then I emailed them. I said, is that okay? And the guy was like, actually, it's kind of not okay. He goes, oh, my bad. You could have just gotten in the half marathon by signing up on the waiting list. And I was like, that's not very clear. Like, if you say it's sold out, but there's a waiting list, that makes it feel like getting on the waiting list is not going to really – that's not going to work out. Like, you're just going to not be able to do the – you know, be in the race or whatever. And so I thought that was kind of bad. I don't know. I didn't think that was like very clear. And then he said, so what I've done is I've moved you over to the half. I've registered you for the half, but it'll cost you the same amount, which is like $30 more. Like you pay more money to do the full marathon. And I was like, really? Okay, well, whatever. So it was like his mistake of how he titled things on the page. And then he migrated me over to the half, but we're going to go ahead and keep that extra $30.
I guess, I mean, the way he titled things on the page, maybe that it's like you can sign up, but then if not everybody shows up, I mean, how did he explain, what is the waiting
I don't know, list? And he was kind of apologetic. I mean, he was nice in the email. He was kind of apologetic. He was like, oh, that's my bad. So he basically said, oh, you know what, he goes, I'm sorry that was kind of unclear, but you could have just signed up for the waiting list. So, and then you would have gotten in. And my thought was like, okay, so the next part of this email is going to be where he tells me that he's refunding $30 of my money.
Yeah.
And he's putting me on the waiting list for the half marathon. He said, well, I've moved you over to the half marathon. It's still going to cost you the same. And I was like, okay. But whatever. You know, it's a good cause.
That's what I was thinking. It's $30 for, you know, a small little organization. I'm sure it's not going up anybody's nose.
No, definitely not. It's very healthful people. It's kind of fun. That's my favorite part about doing one of these things is hanging out with all these healthy people and almost, you know, talking myself into thinking I'm one of them. I'm not, because as soon as the race was over, I was just eating half of Barry's pizza and drinking copious amounts of Jameson at the bar while watching the Seahawks game. But it's kind of fun to be – if you go to a small town where a race event is happening, it's just everybody is there as part of the race. You know, everybody's fit. Everybody's been out running, and you kind of feel like you're part of this sort of shared experience, which I actually do sort of enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of shared experiences, this would be a great time for me to go ahead and dial up our special music that we like to play for this thing known as Thanking the Donors of the Day. But that didn't take long at all.
No, that was
seamless.
We'll be with you in just one moment.
I'm distracted because for some reason, once again, I think I talked about this at some point. I'm in iTunes. I have a file called Drops, and that's kind of where a lot of the frequently played audio drops are. It's meant to be a playlist for music. That's what Apple's thinking of. And for reasons I don't understand, the photograph, the picture associated with this playlist is Todd Rundgren's greatest hits.
Oh, yeah, I get that sometimes. It'll just like...
But there is no Rundgren anywhere in this on this playlist.
You're sure? Oh, so yeah? Because, I mean, yeah, because that happens to me. Like, you'll put one song.
Unless this is Todd Rundgren right now.
I think so. Beat on my drum all day.
Yeah,
it's there. It's the instrumental.
Yeah.
With no drums.
Anyway,
that'll happen to me sometimes. It'll always be the weirdest one. It's like a bunch of drops, a bunch of audio stuff, but maybe at one point I had a Gloria Estefan song in there because we were spoofing on something, and then forever the image that goes along with that playlist is a Gloria Estefan.
You know what that is? The rhythm. It got you.
It did. Oh, shoot. The rhythm got me.
Yeah. Let's thank our donors of the day. These people... donated to TBTL. They're making the show possible, and we really do appreciate it. Scott Steele of Arlington, Virginia, where I lived for a hot minute, is one of those folks.
Scott Steele is a great inaugural name for the Trucktober donors, don't you think? Scott Steele.
Yeah.
He drives.
You said everybody's been going crazy about it being day one of Trucktober. And by the way, blessed Trucktober to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. You as well. And also with you. Yeah, somebody sent me an email saying, I know you're not on Facebook anymore, but just so you know, everybody's going crazy about Trucktober there on Facebook. So happy Trucktober, everybody.
I forgot that it was Trucktober until right before the show, and then you were playing that audio package. Julie Prescott of Chantilly, Virginia. Oh, we're out there in Virginia. Yeah. We're out there in the, what is Virginia's state nickname? I want to say... Is Virginia a commonwealth? And what the hell does a commonwealth mean?
That's a good question. Isn't Massachusetts also maybe?
I hear that thrown around. I mean, they're obviously a state because they have to have the mechanics for the mechanism for being part of the U.S. process. But I always feel like I hear the Commonwealth of Virginia.
I think you're right.
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
I'm looking for their motto. Ugh, it's in Latin. Too bad we don't have any listeners
Octopode.
Who are at all into Latin. Sic semper... Tyrannus?
Octopode.
Thus always to octopode. Thus always
Wait,
to octopode.
Really,
no, thus always
really
to sick? Tyrants. That's what it says.
That's what John Wilkes Booth yelled right after he shot Lincoln.
Oh, really?
That's odd. Yeah, he jumped onto the stage, broke his ankle, and yelled, thus always to tyrants.
Wow. That is, even if, I assume that this was the motto of the Commonwealth before the assassination, but maybe they should have updated it to something more internet-y after the assassination, yeah. Because now you have that connection.
This is for you, Jodie Foster.
Mark, famous Mark Chapman. Wait, no.
Yeah,
Chapman.
No.
Yeah. No? No. Chapman was Lenin. Sorry. Who was,
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. I'm out of
the guy who shot Reagan, yeah. Which I kind of felt like I saw a tweet today that said it was this comedian that I like. I assume he's a comedian. I don't know, he's like a funny guy in his 20s. He said one time Jodie Foster retweeted one of his tweets. And he goes, back in the old days, you had to shoot Reagan to get her attention.
Oh,
I feel like that's an okay joke.
Yeah.
Because Reagan survived.
Right, yes.
Although
sure.
Things were less great for James Brady, who was caught in the collateral part of that. So, you know, I mean, shooting anyone is not something really to joke about. But I did feel like it kind of got past because of the fact that Reagan went on to live a many, many years of a happy life.
Yeah. Presumably. Hinckley, of course. Was his
Hinckley.
Name. Yeah, John Hinckley. Anyway, we're not thanking John Hinckley today.
No, we are not. In fact, we have returned his donation.
That's right. I mean, once the media called us out on it, certainly.
Well, we have a lot of donors of the day.
We
don't go through it with a fine-tooth comb.
All of this stuff. Yeah.
But I want to be very clear. We returned that money immediately. Brian Covey of Seattle. This is funny. Clearly, there's a typo, unless there's a Seattle, Indiana. Have we been down this road before?
I swear. You know what? We got to get some new lists. Can they just start using a new list? Because I swear we are now doing –
we are
reading the same mistakes that we read every year. Yeah, this is a typo because I am not seeing – when you type in Seattle, Indiana, you just get flights from Seattle to Indiana.
Speaking of which, I'll be in Indiana for like 4 hours next week. You and I are going to be in St. Paul.
Yeah.
That's going to be a blast. Very excited about that. But then we are also on Tuesday of that week. I have to go to Indianapolis because I have to shoot a little bit of a piece for CBS that I've been working on, and then I'm going to fly back to Indiana. Or
in the same day. I like that kind of commuting style. That's
very
jet-setting.
Jet-setty. Yes. So thanks to Brian Covey of Seattle, Washington, also known as Seattle, Indiana. Thank you to Virginia Beta of Beacon, New York. I've been to Beacon, New York. I love Beacon, New York.
You're sure that's not beautiful. Beacon, Indiana?
Oh, crap. You know what it is? It's Beacon, Indiana. Mm. Virginia, thank you for donating. And then Ellen Mida of San Jose, California. Ellen, Virginia. And Virginia, I'm fighting the urge to call you Virginia.
Yes, and also, could you notice we have two people from Virginia and one person named Virginia?
Yes.
Or is that what you were just pointing out?
No, I wasn't. I was saying, you know, Virginia Horston's hot air balloon ride.
Yeah.
The name Virginia, which was my grandmother's name, actually, it will forever be Virginia to me.
I know. That is one of the funniest jokes. It's
just
so,
so bizarre.
Weird, yes. Virginia Horseman.
Okay, fine. We're doing this now. It's happening.
Did you find it?
Well, I've always... oh, man, you know what? All I have is, like, I just have short...
Yeah, I haven't.
Virginia Horson's hot air balloon rides. You don't have to worry about terrorists or long lines, and it's just you and me up in the air.
Whoa!
I mean, that is just the greatest, oddest character.
Yes, it really is, from the name on down.
Yeah, I'm not one of those college types that's going to talk your ears off. So Scott, Julie, Brian, Virginia, and Ellen, thank you for supporting TBTL. Thanks for making the show possible. This episode, 2,739 in a collector series, is all thanks to you. Hey, by the way, I'm doing that thing where I look at the website every day, and I think that things are really going to start happening to me and the show now.
I'm doing that thing where
I'm not going to screw up the show number every day.
Do you do that thing where you look at the screen and you don't talk, but then you look away from the screen and you talk to it?
Yes.
Do you do that?
Yes.
I love it.
I'm trying to learn how to change my instincts, or at least ignore them.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, let's do a top story here.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
We need to tread carefully with this top story, Andrew, because you and I don't have little kids. And I know a lot of our listeners do have little kids. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have done some kind of somewhat elaborate revealing of the gender of their baby. And it's one of those things that I got to be honest with you. It seems like it's gotten kind of ridiculous to me, but I say that as a person who does not have a bun in any ovens that I know of.
you know, really get around. You cad.
Just told that joke.
And so it's the kind of thing where you and I both not having any young children, I think it'd be very easy for us to take shots at this. These gender reveal parties, but then we'll probably have some listeners who have done something like this, and I don't want them to be offended. And I don't know what my response would be if I was, you know, if Carrie were pregnant. Who knows? I might go in for all manner of stuff that I think seems ridiculous from afar, if that makes any sense.
But I think we can both agree that no matter whether I had one child or 25, I would never go in for something like a big, splashy gender reveal party. That doesn't mean that it's wrong if you are that type of person, but I would be too busy hiding from the SNL post-show gathering on stage.
Yes. In front of parenting. Yes. You'd be doing the parenting equivalent of that.
Right.
You would not want anyone to know when your kid's birthday was.
No, that would be so torturous for my kid.
I know,
right? We don't celebrate birthdays in this house.
Why, Daddy? Because Daddy's embarrassed of his birthday.
Because Daddy's got shame. We've been over this.
A guy in Arizona named Dennis Dickey has been he's been ordered to pay $100,000 plus $500 a month for the next 20 years because his gender reveal party announcement, what have you, started an $8 million forest fire that blazed 47,000 acres.
What'd he do?
This is crazy. I guess this is a thing. He did this back in 2017, but now I guess they finally figured out what his punishment is going to be. This boggles the mind. This is apparently a popular way to reveal the gender of your children. And by the way, I'll just mention gender is a construct, right? Sexual, that's right, right? Like your physical body is not a construct, but gender is a construct, right?
Sure.
Is that true?
Yeah. You're just like, pointing that out because there are people
out
there.
Well, I'm pointing out that, like, yeah, and also it's in this article, which I forget. The cut, Gabriella Paella or Paella. Could their last name be Paella? This person writing says at the end, Dickey will star in public service announcements for the U.S. Forest Service. This is true. This guy's going to have to be in. It's like a real Johnny Depp Amber Heard situation.
Yeah. The forest is a wonderful place.
Yes. And what does he say?
Australia is a wonderful island.
And Australians are just as unique, both warm and direct.
Dickey is going to have to star in public service announcements with the U.S. Forest Service. And then this is Gabriella's addition, which will hopefully involve Smokey Bear looking straight at the camera and saying gender is a social concept. Only you can promote the idea that gender is a social construct.
That's a good line, Gabriella.
So anyway, this is what this guy, he's by the way, he's a border agent. He's a border patrol agent. You know, I don't want to, I mean, look, I think we should have national borders. Like, I don't think that we shouldn't have borders as a country. And I know that not every border agent is my worst in the sort of worst version of a border agent as I envision them. So I don't want to speculate on this guy, but this was how he and his wife decided to reveal to the world, I assume the world of their friends, that the gender of the baby. This is what they did. He shot a target that was filled with either pink or blue powder plus an explosive substance called tannerite. So I don't think that I need to explain this probably to the listeners, but the part of this gender reveal thing is that you don't know the gender. You as the – again, I say that with all the stuff about it being a social construct already having been sort of duly noted. But that you have to like send the – like your doctor's office has to send your information, your baby's information to some third-party outfit that then sends you either a box full of balloons and you open the box and it lets out pink balloons or blue balloons or – a cake, that's a big thing that people were doing. Or in this case, I guess they send you a target that's full of explosives and either pink or blue powder, and you shoot the target, shoot the glass, and then it blows up and it tells you if you're having, if your child will be physically male or physically female.
Okay.
But because of this tannerite, because like it would, you know, when you're doing your gender reveal target practice demonstration, Andrew, you want to get a good explosion.
Oh yeah.
That's where the tannerite comes in. The problem is the tannerite was apparently has some sort of flammable qualities to it. Dickey told authorities about the fire immediately after it started. The tannerite blew up. There was an explosion. It sparked a fire that quickly spread through the dry brush. It was spurred on by unusually high winds and lower than average rainfall. By the time it was fully contained, a week later, it had done $8 million worth of damage.
A week later.
And he, I mean, he did, to his credit, I guess we'll say, he told the, he told authorities immediately. He didn't, I mean, he's probably putting this shit on YouTube. By the way, did the video make its way onto YouTube? Did they still use, like, did they send it around? Or did they just edit the end part off?
Oh, man, like, I hope so. I'm checking all the links in this.
Hey, this is Dennis and Karen, and we just, we're so excited. We wanted to share with you our baby's gender. Watch this video. Oh, God, the sparks, the Tannerite. Like, I wonder if they still sent the video out.
At the end, he's in the fetal position singing Amazing Grace.
Sing Grace.
Oh, man.
I was tempted to, I was really tempted to play that, but I didn't want to give away the sort of outcome. You know what I mean?
Meanwhile, yeah. Tobias had arranged an audition for a local commercial.
First of all, I love it. Quick question, though. Am I panicked about the fire, or am I being brave for everyone else?
The fire. It's a fire sale.
Okay, I didn't, well, let's give it a shot. Oh my God! We're having a fire sale! Oh, the burning! Ah! Amazing Grace! This isn't a fever! Can't even see where the knob is! And scene.
I gotta play the end, because this is the greatest part.
Would you like to try that a little simpler, maybe?
No.
So great.
This
so
is
amazing.
But like, okay, like, I mean, this was, this, it strikes me as way over the top, this way of telling people what the sex of your baby will be. And that's really, you know what, that's the story here. I think that these should be called sexual organ reveal parties, right? Because I finally figured
well,
out.
Well, I'm not going to respond to an invite to a sexual organ reveal party. I don't know about you.
Right. Well, we commonly say gender. We should be saying what sexual organs is the baby right. going to have?
Well,
we don't know what the
Well, that, I mean, I think the whole thing. I mean, you can't. I just don't think you can hold these both ideas in your head at the same time. Like, if you are a person who truly believes that right. gender is a construct, I don't think you're also the same kind of person who is assigning pink and blue to a baby's gender and then having a big party about related.
Right.
To
there's
that.
That as well.
You know,
right?
Like I just.
But
don't
I was gonna.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is crazy. $100,000. That's. Not an insignificant amount of money, and $500 a month for 20 years. This, I mean, this has really effed their life up. This baby is not going to go to college because daddy started a forest fire.
Yeah.
Trying to tell people what its gender was going to be.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, maybe hopefully it's a golden baby. And then, well, yeah. then I guess you have to sell your baby, and that's not a happy ending either. Have you ever been in a situation, because I have once in my life that I can think of, where for a moment...
I've got a golden ticket.
Keep going.
I had a moment where I thought a fire was getting out of control from me in a way that was going
Whoa.
To be a... big problem, because that's the you read a story like this and you're like, okay,
as
you're
opposed
out in the
to those out of control fires that are sort of NBD,
right? You read like, a story like this, and you're like, how can you go from like starting a little fire in the woods, it's just you and your family, to a week later they're trying to contain it? Well, obviously this happens all the time. I mean, you live in Southern California, you live in all kinds of places. People are throwing cigarettes out their window at the wrong time of year. A brush fire starts, and the next thing you know, it's a huge, huge forest fire that is, you know, causing millions of dollars of damage. But for me, I was I am hoping that my parents won't listen to this. I was when I was back smoking as a teenager. I would. This is not in the very rural part of Ohio where I grew up as a kid. I'm older now, and I'm living in a very suburban area, an area that's still being developed, but kind of an old school Cleveland suburb. And I would sometimes go. I believe nobody was home at this time, and I was going to smoke a cigarette behind the garage, which was like a little standalone one car garage where we kept. I don't know if anybody actually used it for their car, but we definitely had like lawnmower stuff in there, et cetera, gasoline. I'm behind this area, but I'm actually a little, I'm a few steps behind it. Sometimes I would stand and just lean against it and smoke a cigarette, but there's a little bit of woods behind it, not very big, but just a little area that I didn't know where it belonged to. And I'm kind of in that area, almost like a little, is glen the right word? A little kind of woodsy clearing. Yeah. And I believe I'm sitting on a log smoking a cigarette and probably playing with my lighter, and I lit a leaf on fire. You know, and then put it out or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I lit another leaf on fire. And then somehow, and I can't remember exactly the details, whatever, maybe I even cleared a little space in the dirt. I'm like, I'll just light these five leaves on fire. Like I created a little area. But immediately, my tiny little fire that I was just doing out of fidgeting and nothing more jumped my fire line. And it was an incredible experience. I'm probably 16 years old, let's say. There was just no way this was going to get out of control. I was just messing around with a couple of leaves, like, in my backyard. But all of a sudden, I'm stamping on this one, and all of a sudden, it's catching over there. Oh. And now it's getting bigger, and I'm running around stamping on it. But every time I'm stamping on it, it's kind of getting bigger, and it's flaring up elsewhere. Now I'm kind of like, now I'm looking around me. I'm like, well, there's our garage right there that has a bunch of gasoline and stuff in it. And then, you know, I'm also behind other people's houses as well. And I'm stomping on it. I mean, it felt like a lifetime. It probably lasted, I mean, you know, a minute or less, you know, like, but it was.
How did
a
you get it under control?
I think I just kept stamping. And that is why I came up with the philosophy and my line of best-selling books, Keep Stamping, The Andrew Walsh Guide to Life After 15. Yeah, no, it was such a panicky moment for me. And again, in the long run, probably everything would have been okay, but I definitely had a moment where I thought, this is out of control. I'm not big enough to run around and stamp all these out, and now I've literally created a forest fire, and probably the barn is going to, or the little garage is going to go up. It was an incredible feeling. And then when you hear stories like this where, oh, it's true. Now, I didn't have any explosives on hand, but you do hear stories about a single cigarette being thrown out a window at the wrong time, and next thing you know, you have a raging Southern California wildfire. Like, this stuff really happens.
A couple things on that. I'm always amazed that they're able, that they're, as frequently as they are able to figure out who started the fire.
Oh, yeah, often we know in those cases,
We know it wasn't Billy Joel. So, like, first of all, the list of suspects goes down by one.
I actually think he protests too much.
That's exactly what you would do if you did start the fire.
Yes, right? Write a whole song about, oh, no, we didn't start it.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
We need to call somebody. We need to report this up the chain. Anyway, I'm always shocked when they are like, you know, there's some giant forest fire in the West, and they're like, yeah, we figured out that it was intentionally it was not started by lightning or whatever. It was started by humans, which, by the way, is the vast majority of fires now. It was started by humans. It was started by some kids playing with firecrackers or whatever. I'm always amazed that they can find and catch the people who did it, because it just seems so anonymous. You're out in the woods, and this is so, like, this is what a terrible person I am. If I accidentally started a forest fire, I would not report myself, because it's not going to change the forest fire. And now I'm out $100,000 and $500. Like, I mean, I guess that technically pays back a small amount of the $8 million that was. So, you know, there's some value to penalizing this guy, because then the taxpayers get back a very small fraction of the $8 million that was spent. But, like, in my mind, it would be like, look, this fire happened.
Mm-hmm.
It was really expensive. Me having to sell my house is not going to bring any of these trees back.
I
would not
with
report
that.
Myself.
You know, I can associate with that, and I you know, it's funny, because before you even raised that, I was thinking, yeah, they always catch these people. But imagine the days or weeks before they catch you, how nervous you would be on the edge of your seat. It never even occurred to me that you would turn yourself in. So I guess I'm in a similar boat as you. But this is going to get a little bit dark, but you could say the same thing about a hit and run too, right? But I can't imagine a world in which I hit somebody like a pedestrian and just speed off.
I would I wouldn't. Yeah, I would never leave because I would be worried about the person. I would.
The person.
I'm not trying to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not trying to say that. Like, you know, I'm such a good citizen. I've just established that I would never report myself if I lit a major forest fire. So it's clear I'm a bad person. But the thing about a hit and run, not only would I be really worried about the physical safety of the person who got hit, and I would take the punishment just so I could get out of the car and be like, try to help them.
Right, of course.
But the other thing would be disastrous for me about that would be the not knowing if they're going to come knock on your door someday and find you.
Right.
That would, I mean, that's, I don't think I have that stress dream anymore, but I feel like I used to have a version of a stress dream. I think this is pretty common too, where you killed someone, like, and you are just, and they're getting close, you know, the police or whoever are kind of circling around you, like they're figuring it out that it's you. That, like, that would ruin my life. I would probably rather be in jail for having done something awful than to live my life with the constant fear of being found out.
Yeah.
That would be, for me, that would be a living hell.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I had there was a period of time. God, this is from the same era of my life.
I hear you measuring your words.
I've told this story before. I hate this story. It's terrible. It's so terrible. I was such a terrible person. I am a terrible person. But remember that time? There were a lot of other things going on in my life at the time, too, which made me very anxious. But also, I was driving with my friend Tony, who the aforementioned Tony. This is not his fault at all, by the way. He did not push me into this scenario. But I was driving with him in my minivan. And a truck cut me off, and so then I got in front of it and another truck. They were driving together like a two-truck caravan. Sort of.
I remember this story.
And I put on my brakes because I was told that if you do that to harass a truck driver, that takes them forever to, like, get their trucks back up to speed on the highway. It was just like I didn't want to get rear-ended, so I'm keeping an eye on the truck that's behind me in my rearview mirror to make sure it doesn't rear-end me. And then I see in the rearview mirror that the truck behind it apparently can't slow down enough to not hit the truck in front of it, and it just goes off the road. I mean, it was dark. It was hard to see exactly what happened, but one of the trucks went off the road, I believe, because of me stepping on my brakes in a harassing way to this other truck, and then the other truck chased me in a weird way. Like, I was always,
whoa.
Yeah. And that's how,
I don't think I knew about the chase.
Yes. It chased me down the highway. I was like, well, obviously they were very clearly together. These two trucks, they were like kind of, they weren't tractor trailers. They were 18 wheelers, but I believe there was some sort of construction, like heavy construction.
Oh.
Thing. And, you could tell they were together. And the one that cut me off was actually the one that I think went off the road. Cause he cut me off. I got angry. I went around both of them and then, stepped on my brakes. And then the other truck chased me. So I thought, oh, they must've radioed each other. And probably the guy who did go off the road maybe said, go get that mother tutor. And sort of chased me for a while. And then I remember,
well, we know what your second book is going to be called. Go get that mother tutor. Life after 30.
And so I was like, well, the relief is probably the person in the one truck is probably fine, because I think they gave a go ahead to the guy in the other truck to go get me. And so then I was like speeding down the highway, and then I took the first exit, and then to my disbelief and horror, the truck took the same exit I did. I finally lost it on some side streets. But during that entire thing, again, I'm probably like 16 at the, no, I didn't get my license until I was 18. Oh, that's right. I was in college at this point. But I was back home, visiting, and, I waited for weeks to get the call, like, that they finally got my number, my license traced.
Oof.
This was also during the same exact, Christmas break, my first Christmas break in college, in which I got caught taking a stupid sign out of the library. It wasn't even me who stole it. My friend took a sign down of the library because he was college. He liked having stolen signs all over his dorm room. He didn't have a place to put it, so he put it in my bag. We both leave the library together. Everything's fine. I go take a test. It's finals. I come back to the library to check out a book. I forgot it's in my bag. And then me leaving the library by myself the second time, it set off the alarm. And so then I got in. Yes. And this is all a true story. And so it set off an alarm, and I remember, like, trying to bluff or lie my way out of it, but I was caught red-handed. So this is right before my very first college break. I actually did okay grade-wise in college, but both some family members and friends had like kind of failed out of their first semester of school, and I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I can do it. And then I get this letter in the mail that says, you know, you've been summoned to come to this like hearing on campus about this stealing of the sign, and the punishment could be this, and the worst thing could lead to expulsion. You know, you could be expelled from school right. over this. Obviously, they did not expel me, but at the time, I'm like, it's this one, like, I'm going to say 4 week break. I'm home from school, and I'm worried that I'm going to get kicked out of college. And also that they're going to tell me that I'm under arrest for running a truck off the road. It was not best sleep I'd ever gotten that Christmas.
I would imagine that the last time you told this story, I probably followed it up with this story, which was, well, first of all, it's just kind of funny. Not funny. It's interesting because you were, I think, generally a much better person, a more moral person, and like more worried about being in trouble than I was probably at this age. I was busy getting people pregnant and, like, you know, would steal anything that wasn't nailed down. Like, I just really was kind of – I just was a bad kid, but and a bad maybe early 20s. But I at this, around this same time that you thought you were going to get kicked out of Kent State and that you would, like – in a I Know What You Did Last Summer type movie plot, you would, like, kill the truck driver. I was in the dorm at the University of Washington, McMahon Hall, listening to No Woman, No Cry and other songs by Bob Marley and thinking, I have gotten a second person pregnant. Like, I am going to be a father of two, and I'm 19. And I, of course, the irony or the hilarious part of that is that the person I thought I got pregnant, I never had sex with.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how paranoid I was because of having one kid when I was 17. And so it's funny to me to think of me in my dorm just thinking my life is over, mm-hmm. and you in your dorm or apartment thinking your life is over.
Right.
And, you know, here we are 20 years later. And we know our life is over. It was not wrong. Right. Just took 20 years for it. I didn't know it would be, you know, by way of a podcast. I thought it would be what do you call it? The people who collect child support enforcement from the state of Washington.
Well, what do you think the statute of limitations is on these types of things? Like, is somebody going to come knocking on my door and saying, oh, yeah, I was the – actually, the first time I told this story, I probably told this story when I first joined TBTL back in 2012. I was like, I only got three stories. One was about running away. One was about being a telemarketer. And one was about running these trucks off the road. But I remember being very nervous to tell that story publicly on the podcast because I was like, maybe somebody could trace where I was and somebody would say, hey, that was – you know, my brother tells a story about some asshole minivan that ran him off the road.
You know, my typical joke there would be, yeah, there's no chance of them hearing this. There's like, we don't have enough listeners. But what I have learned doing the show is somehow it would get to them.
Yeah.
This, for having this a relatively one, small amount of listeners, whenever we don't want someone to find out that what we're talking about on the show. Oh, this is a good time for me to – I don't think I've announced this publicly, although I've been telling people about this kind of off-air. We were texting with our friend, our one and only famous friend, Chris Hayes from MSNBC, and we were talking about something on the show. You were referencing something, and he said, oh, man, I had to declare bankruptcy on like 2 weeks of the show.
Oh, yeah, and that's right.
I've been telling everybody this good. Because it's so genius, and I think this is actually an important thing. Like –
because I knew he was behind in listening, and right. He referenced something that just happened on the show, and I texted back like, wow, you caught up so quickly. He said, no, I had to declare bankruptcy.
I love that. I mean, I think it's kind of funny. I think we can call it declaring bankruptcy or Chapter 11.
Yeah.
And I think that this is – like we need. I want to offer amnesty because what happens is I think people know this. They listen to the show, and then they get busy, and then they get a week or two behind, and they don't want to just like start listening – in real time with us because they want to know what all the dumb inside jokes are references to. They want to know when Keep Stampin', Andrew Walsh's Guide to Life After 15, when the origin of that was. Right. And so, like, but that becomes a problem because – and it actually probably leads to us having fewer listeners because these people are sitting there with, you know, months of show backing up. And they're just kind of like it's overwhelming. And I want to like offer amnesty. I want to tell like, hey, you know what? Just go ahead. Chapter 11. Do it. Or Chapter 7. I don't fully know the difference.
I mean, would it be funnier if we called it Chapter 10 since we're like all about the 10s? Or is that just confusing?
I think that's too confusing.
Yeah.
I think Chapter 11 is a good way to go with it. Just declare Chapter 11. And if you have a friend, this is where the listeners come in, because people are listening to me right now, us right now. Well, they're listening to the show, but they might have friends who are like, yeah, I'm totally behind on my TBTL, and they're just like that. Now it's intimidating. They look in their phone every day, and there's like, oh man, there's another 1 to 3 hours of TBTL jibber jabber.
Yeah,
that I can't listen to because I haven't gone back to the 3 months previously. Please tell your friends, just declare bankruptcy and just join us. Join us today on the show.
Yeah, you'll catch up pretty quickly. You'll find out that.
Yeah. As we've established, yeah. Andrew has 3 stories.
Yeah.
And I have 2 stories.
Right. So, yeah, I think that you can. And I've had that same experience as a listener with other shows, too. I mean, I've been that way with, like, Kevin and Bean, which is kind of a similar show as ours. I mean, they have a more, you know, consistent length, but. It's like, you know, it's the type of show that you listen to because you just want to hang out with your gang, your virtual friends, right? And so you do that, but then you get out of the loop for a while, and then you almost have this weird, like, guilt feeling sometimes, or a strange feeling like, oh, God, I fell behind. It's going to be so hard to catch up. But then you just put it on, you listen for 5 minutes, and you're just like, ah, I'm back home. It's never that big of a hill to climb.
Yeah, seriously. You've heard the show. Not that much happens, really, mm-hmm. honestly. Speaking of not much happening, we're at the end of the show, at least the non-sports related end of the show. So if you don't care about if you aren't interested in hearing a grown man cry in an office in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, this is where you can just turn the show off. But for those of you who want to hear us talk about sports, the No Point Conversation, rather No Point Conversion, is coming up here. What? Hey, I don't know. You're the one that turned me on to this song. But for some reason yesterday, I got on a Gordon Lightfoot thing. I was playing Carefree Highway at this cabin that we rented mm-hmm. in Winthrop. Oh, my God. I was loving it, Jerry.
Carefree Highway. That song? Yeah, definitely. And I would like to, assuming we don't come up with any better show titles in the No Point Conversion, I would like to call the show Mole Country for Old Men.
Call it, friendo.
All right, dude. Let's get some
I love it.
Let's get some Gordo going on here. Speaking of Kevin and Bean. You know,
oh yeah, he's
Gordon Lightfoot
loves that Gordon Lightfoot loves that Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, right?
Yes. Do you want to play that in its entirety? You know, people get mad at us for playing American Pie so many times. We could have played the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and we didn't. So you're welcome, listeners. Yeah.
Where's our parade?
All right, that's going to do it for this portion of the show. Thank you for listening. Those of you who are all done. We'll see the rest of you around the bend with the No Point Conversion. Please remember, how about this? Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Every highway, you've seen better days, the morning after blues, from my head down to my shoes. Every highway, let me slip away. Slip away on you. Turning back the pages to the times I love best. I wonder if she'll ever do the same. Now the thing that I call living is just being satisfied. With knowing I got no one left to blame. Carefree highway, I got to see you, my old flame. Carefree highway, you've seen better days. The morning after blues, from my head down to my shoes. Carefree highway, let me slip away on you.
Andrew, dude.
What is happening? Is this the same one that I sent you?
Yes.
there's something going on with your weird setup over there. That's so strange. I got to just start playing it from my end.
I'm going to play this directly from the email you sent me, okay? I pulled it. I dragged it to my desktop, and then I put it. Welcome to the No Point Conversion, everybody, where we diagnose audio problems. Okay, I'm going to just play this that you emailed me this.
Okay, and I'm downloading it. Yeah.
That sounds weird. And
that's
janky.
Bad. Yeah, something's overblown.
Sounds like this should be in a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Out at the church. That sounds even worse somehow.
What's going on?
Okay, here. This is the same exact file. Just to be sure, this is the one that I emailed you. I just downloaded this from my email as well. Okay, let's just see.
Much clearer, much crisper.
So that part is. Now let's get to the bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's smooth. Maybe I just got to start playing it from over here.
You have a new job. Finally, I've been able to offload some of the audio work on you of the show.
All right, let's listen.
I had one remaining job, which is to play K-Dude Milogi, and I can't even do that.
Should we let him rap a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let him rap about it. And rap about it.
Listen to the crowd sing. Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense. To say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense. Being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing that evening. A Super Bowl Sunday, cause they're gonna go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way to the end of the game, and to go down in fame as the Super Bowl champions of this year. This team should be feared.
You better saddle up when you roll with Seattle. Broncos. All right.
Oh, man. Gotta love Lil Hoagie.
These kids are in college now.
I know. I love it. They're in college thinking that their life is over. They're sitting in a dorm room staring into the middle distance, waiting for the authorities to knock on the door. All right. Big football weekend. Shall we start with the Seahawks?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Seahawks beat the Arizona Cardinals 2017. It was a really sort of lousy game, honestly. Like, I don't think that the Seahawks triumphed over the Arizona Cardinals as much as the Arizona Cardinals are a very bad team right now. They dropped multiple passes. They just made a lot of dumb mistakes. And the Seahawks, they also missed field goals, as did the Seahawks. Somehow the Seahawks just kind of like outlasted them. But this did not make me feel like, this game did not make me feel like we sent a message to the rest of the league. We were just 5% less terrible than an objectively 0-4 terrible team in the Arizona Cardinals. Peace and love to any listeners in Arizona who love the Cardinals. I just don't think that they're a great team as of right now. The bigger story, though, is Will Dissly, Uncle Will, is out for the season probably with some patellar injury, which I knew right when he went down that was bad because he was lying on the sideline and he had his hands over his face like that kind of I'm really hurt look. I was like, dang it.
And we should just say he was one of the most kind of exciting new pieces, I think, one of the exciting new pieces of the Seahawks, a tight end, good receiver. And am I right? Was he a rookie from Washington? So he had the UW connection. I mean, it's such a real, I mean, you feel terrible.
And it
for
was a
him.
Non.
It's just so soul crushing.
And it was like, it was just one of those weird things where I don't know if it was had to do with the way the sideline was put together or what, but like or there was maybe something slippery over there. It's like it was kind of a non-contact injury. He was sort of running over there. Mm-hmm. I think he'd caught the ball, but so maybe he was sort of being tackled, but it was like a weird thing where he just stepped funny out of bounds and messed up his kneecap, I guess. So that was a bummer because he's been a bright spot. He's like the one play. He is basically feels like an upgrade over Jimmy Graham because he can actually block and he's been catching more than Jimmy Graham was catching. Although Jimmy Graham had a lot of touchdowns last year.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the few positions where I could say we actually may have improved at that position. And now he's out, so that sucks. The Earl Thomas thing was nuts as well. Earl Thomas fractures the same leg that he broke a couple seasons ago. And you could tell right away that was really bad news. I mean, they were like immediately down on the team was surrounding him. They were down on their knees. They're praying. They're doing all the stuff. The craziest part is as he's on the cart being wheeled off, he flips off the Seahawks sideline.
It was so presumably surreal. Like, can I just mention, he's also like, it's not just Seahawks who are coming up to him and, you know, kind of tapping him while he's laying there, getting on the stretcher. He's carted off. And as he's being carted off, he's carted off along the Arizona Cardinals sideline. So you see all of these Cardinals lining up, tapping him on the back, giving him attaboys and support as he goes by. And you're like, what a great look for the NFL and for Earl Thomas and for the Seahawks. Just like seeing like everybody come together as human beings and as football players as this guy's getting carted off the field. And then he flips off his own team. It was just like he was on the sideline with Arizona, you know, kind of getting loved on by them and then flipping off the team that he actually plays for.
Yeah. I mean, he's been doing a version of this all season because, of course, he's been mad at the Seahawks for not extending his contract. We talked about this last week. He's been doing things like going to the Dallas locker room and saying, pick me up. It's just very bizarre. It's like he's been like flirting with the waiter. He's on a date with his spouse, but he's flirting with the waitress because the marriage is so bad. He's openly hostile towards the person that he's committed to, theoretically. And so this was just, I mean, this was sort of the cherry of surreality, I guess, on the whole thing, is him getting injured, which is exactly what he was worried would happen, and being carted off the field and getting encouraged by the other team and flipping off his team. Although I don't think he's flipping off the players. I think he's sort of flipping off Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
And if John Schneider was there, John Schneider. Now, that being said, Pete Carroll kind of defended him. He said, you know, there's a lot of people on that sideline. You don't know who he's flipping off. I thought that was unintentionally hilarious.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, Pete Carroll was actually not. Pete Carroll seemed to feel really sad about Earl Thomas being hurt. And he, according to Pete Carroll, they had just kind of reached a truce this week. Like, they had actually, things were kind of okay. He practiced a couple times. Like, they had finally sort of worked it out. And now, you know, here he is. He breaks his leg. Such a bizarre injury. I have to say that I kind of ended up, how do I put this? Not at odds. I sort of at odds with our friend Brock on Twitter, although I don't think he knows it. Brock has, like, way more Twitter followers than I do. But I was looking at Twitter yesterday afternoon, and, you know, I'll just say this. Brock and I are not politically aligned, and I think that he tends to look at the world as kind of sort of in black and white, like, hey, if you're a pro football player, you're making a lot of money. I mean, he was a pro football player. So he's got more experience in this department than I do. I just watch the sports. But I think he tends to think if you are a pro football player, you need to show class and dignity, and you need to be appreciative of getting to, you know, have this job and make all this money. I saw a tweet that he put out. I'm trying to find. There's a lot going on with my Twitter feed here. I'm like scrolling through many, many a thing that is not what I'm trying to find. Oh, here we go. So Brock wrote, Earl's final image in a Seahawk uniform is being carted off the field, air cast in place, and a middle finger to the only organization he's ever known. Sad. My response to that was, and I basically retweeted with comment. I said, I actually think it's a totally reasonable response to the NFL as an entity, mm-hmm. in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And I kind of stand by that. By the way, some MAGA dude almost. Here's all you need to know. If it's a white guy and his Twitter name is Free Speech for All, forget it. You know, he thinks white guys don't have enough free speech.
Right.
I promise you. And he was like, please explain. And I was like, yeah, right. Good try. I'm not going to like waste my afternoon trying to like argue. I went and looked at the guy's feed, and it was just like a bunch of retweeting of things that I find totally odious as ideas. So anyway, I don't usually call out people we know online or even disagree with them publicly. I'm not really into beefs. And again, this is like a hammer and a nail having a rivalry. Brock is way more famous than me and has a lot of Twitter followers. So I don't think he's losing any sleep over it. But I'm fine with, I mean, I don't know if it was like, how do I put this? I can see an argument that it's like, come on, dude, that's a little bit classless. Like if I got hurt at Livewire, which would be bizarre, and they're carting me out of the theater and I'm flipping off the executive producer of Livewire. Would that be a good look for me? No. But I do also feel like the NFL as a league extracts life energy and health and long-term brain function from these men. And in exchange, it gives them a very small amount of the money that is made in this league. And these contracts, I think, are really unfair the way they're set up because they only indenture the players, and the teams can drop the player as soon as. In fact, I don't know. The Seahawks might drop Earl Thomas. Wouldn't that be weird? I mean, they might. I don't know. Do they get to, like, they might cut him right now. Do they save money? Is he past? He's got to be past the guaranteed money on his contract.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
But, like, I feel like this is a. If I can now have it out with the guy who wanted me to explain to him on Twitter why I think that this is not an unreasonable response from Earl Thomas, to me it's like he's not just flipping off the Seahawks, you know, brass. I think he's flipping off the NFL's system, which, as I talked about last week, to me feels like it's a system that uses these guys up and then spits them out when they no longer have anything to offer the league. And there's billions of dollars made, and players do not get billions of dollars. Players get a lot of money, some of them, but the average player is actually not getting that rich. They're making okay money for a short amount of time. A lot of it goes to taxes. A lot of it goes to their agents. So anyway, the fact that Earl Thomas wanted to get more stability in his contract, in his life, and now he's got a broken leg, as they said on a Deadspin, he has no contract and one leg now. It's a bad time to be Earl Thomas. Although they do think it's going to heal fine. There's no ligament damage. Like, it's actually, as far as these things go, you know, it could have been worse, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was just a bizarre scene. I guess I empathize with Earl Thomas in this a little bit. What do you think?
Well, one thing I want to say that I've been puzzling on since you mentioned it is, and I'm on Brock's, you know, tweet now. I saw when you kind of retweeted with comment his thing. And first
shots
of all,
fired.
A couple of things, actually. No, I saw when you tweeted that last night, and that didn't come off as shots fired at all. It just seemed like you kind of saying. But again, maybe this is me just being too much of a. I don't know, but yeah, or like a Pollyanna-ish, but neither one of your comments really seemed like fighting words to me, because honestly, right. I think what Brock was saying was, it's sad. Like, I could be wrong. I mean, I know that you end a quote with sad, and it sounds like you're doing some sort of a Trumpian kind of thing, but I think that, like, Brock, who, and I actually may even lean a little bit more towards him in this particular case, because I do think that Earl Thomas, as we discussed last week, like, before all of this even started going down last season, you know, running into the other team's locker room and saying, hey, give me a deal. Like, to me, I'm like, you have other ways you can do that. You're publicly throwing a fit. Everything you says makes a lot of sense to me, and I like to think that I'm more on the player's side when it comes to this stuff. But I also think that some players handle themselves in ways that would make me not want to work with them or give them a better deal. Right. I just think that Brock Huard is right. To me, it's sad. Yeah. Like, it just seems sad. Like, we just went from having, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, just like this historically good, you know, defense that had its own name and has its own legacy and all these things. And listen, that's never going to stay that way forever, but it would be nice if things ended nicely and gradually, and you're able to kind of have a legacy where these football greats end up kind of training other Seahawks who will take their place as they will inevitably go to other teams. But all of the diaspora and ending of the Legion of Boom is just been really sad, because it is so acrimonious, because of the articles about everybody talking shit about Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and how they weren't respected enough, which I know I keep on referring to that same article over and over, but it just is a really ugly, sad end to the Legion of Boom. Starting with the first injuries last year and everything that's happened since. And so, I don't know. I think him saying it's sad is kind of sad on a bunch of different levels. And you know, Brock, he has a big heart, and then you saying, I think it's a proper kind of image to the entire NFL. That doesn't even sound like fighting words. It sounds, I can agree with both of you guys on that. You know,
I think that's a good way to put it, and I think you're right. I think I'm probably like, you're right. I don't think there's any way to say it isn't a sad end, because it's acrimonious, and that's a bummer. I guess I feel like. I just think that the contracts are pretty unfair in that mm-hmm. league, in this league. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Like, I don't think I can say. I think it's almost like two different issues. I think that it is. I think you're right, and I think Brock's right in that sense. It is a sad thing. It's like a divorce that is acrimonious. It's like anytime you leave a job, but this is played out on a more public stage. Mm-hmm. This is like, you're right. I mean, the Legion of Boom was such a fun thing to have that. You knew it couldn't last forever, but this is the worst. Everybody's in court suing everybody. Over over, you know, this is mine and that is yours.
That was
and
my grandma's. Yeah, but you gave it to me.
This is an old, that old wagon wheel coffee table. That's a line from When Harry Met Sally. But yeah, it is a sad ending and just kind of weird, too, because it was like this was the whole thing he was trying to avoid. It also raises the question. I heard them talking about this on Danny David Moore. I love that show, by the way. I know you've been
really good. Yeah.
You've been listening to them a lot, and I just started listening kind of more regularly the other day. That's a good sports talk show, I think.
Really
Danny
is
great. I like Dave. Jim is a crank, but he serves a purpose on the show. But they were talking about this question of if not practicing actually is more dangerous for the players. They were saying that, you know, a lot – or not going full speed in practice. You know, the idea is that if you don't practice as hard or if you don't have so much contact in practice – that you're just reducing the number of concussions, reducing the number of the beating your body takes. But then also it's like guys seem to get hurt more in games.
If they don't, practice.
And I can't quite decide how I feel about that because if you think about your body as just being like, you know, a video game character and you have a certain amount of like power or life in that body, doesn't it just stand to reason that more banging into that body is going to run down the power or the life on that body? Like, I don't understand how it supposedly that helps you be ready for the game. Like, there's physical fitness, but, like, I don't understand how banging really hard into a guy makes you more ready to bang really hard into a guy on Sunday. Yeah, like, doing it on Thursday and kind of hurting yourself, I don't know how that makes you more durable come Sunday. To me, it just seems the opposite.
Yeah, I don't know. I see what you're saying. I guess maybe the other argument is just like, yeah, but your body is conditioned for it more, and maybe you don't hit as hard in practice so that your body isn't quite as shocked when you're out there actually playing another team, right? And there must be something about that, too. Maybe in the same way that, I don't know, it's an incredibly strenuous, like maybe if you're a stunt driver in a movie, you know, you don't want to just like jump in a car for the first time.
You'll dislocate a rib doing that. Yeah. I speak from experience.
Right. But anyway, I don't know. Let me just end that analogy there because that's probably a stupid thing to say. But yeah, I could maybe see it both ways, but I don't know enough about it. But I mean, the other, I think, huge narrative was the Seabass, right? I just sort of feel like if things hadn't been different with Sebastian Janikowski, I mean, while it was a low-scoring game between the Seahawks, whom we love, and I guess now are they 0-4 team, right? Arizona, were they winless going into this game? Am I correct on that?
Yes.
So low-scoring game between two teams. If this was a nationally televised game, I think the audience would be mad. It was an interesting narrative. The Seahawks fell behind because they weren't helped by two missed field goals by Sebastian Janikowski, our favorite kicker, who's 49 years old.
Yes.
And looks like he just got done hot boxing in his brother's Tercel. But he misses.
Did you tell the story? You told the story last week that our friend John passed along, right?
Yes, I think I told that last week. His buddy found him drunk on a bench. But then he ends up kicking the game-winning field goal with only seconds left on the clock. And so then he goes from total zero to hero. I was not watching the game live. I was watching the Browns game live, so I was taping the Seahawks game. So I didn't get to, like, watch all of the hot takes in real time via text message or Twitter. But when I was trying to scroll through after I was all caught up by like 8 o'clock at night and I'm trying to piece together everybody's feelings, it sounds like, I don't know if it was in our text chain or on Twitter or both, but people were basically calling for Seabass's head saying, we need a new kicker. Yeah. This is clearly not working out. But then, and that probably would have been the narrative today if he doesn't kick that final winning field goal, which was not a chip shot. Was it over 50 or was it close to 50 yards?
52, I believe, was the...
Yeah.
He had missed a 38-yarder and a 52-yarder, and then I think he hit a 52-yarder to win it.
Yeah, and so now he's like a hero and will probably stick around for a while, right?
I guess, although that's its own weird thing, is like, I mean, yeah, he hit one out of... three, that's not a good odds.
No.
Or that's not good efficiency. And granted, the one was the one we needed at the end, but only because he had missed the other two. I still kind of feel like, I don't know, the problem is who else? I mean, there's not anybody better out there. As our friend Durs pointed out, the guy that we cut in favor of him is now with the Jets and is 5-for-5 this season with the Jets.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is just one of those, I mean, that just sort of happens, I guess. But it's like, I don't know who else is out there who's better. This has been a weird couple of years for kickers. I mean, as evidenced by Blair Walsh and all of his problems, and And like, there have been kickers have really gotten the yips in the last couple of years.
So yeah,
I don't know if there's anybody. I don't know if there's somebody better than Seabass. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to do about that.
They've
been calling me, asking me all day. They've been saying, "Luke, what should we do?"
Right.
Like, I don't know, guys. You're the GM of the Seahawks. You figure it out.
Right.
I guess we have. I mean, the thing with Janikowski is, I feel like he's probably going to miss some, but he's also probably going to. He has a lot of leg. Well, he's a big man. He's a substantial man. So I think it's just going to be one of those things where he's going to miss some kicks, but he's also probably going to hit some really far kicks and some. He's certainly, like, he can handle the pressure, presumably. I mean, he's been an NFL kicker for 1,000 years. So that's kind of good. Like, you kind of, they weren't doing him any favors. I couldn't hear the game because we were in a bar watching it, so it was muted effectively. But they weren't doing, the TV crew wasn't doing him any favors. He just kept cutting to, like, shots of forlorn and pensive Sebastian Janikowski throughout the game. So I didn't read anything today about how they're going to, replace him. So I guess presumably he's sticking around for now. Let's talk about, if we can, briefly, and then we got to get to the Browns. So this Earl Thomas injury is really bad news for the Seahawks, because the position that he played was, you know, the safety is kind of the center fielder of the defense. And because first of all, he had 4 interceptions, but also just because he knows he's really good at, like, diagnosing what the other team is about to do, presumably he can kind of make up for the fact that we have some younger cornerbacks, and, like, if he plays really well, which he was, he can cover some deficiencies that we have. So now it's going to be Tedrick Thompson, who actually played for him in the one good thing about Earl's holdout is Tedrick Thompson got a lot of meaningful snaps. But Tedrick Thompson is not Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best free safeties to ever play the game of football. And it's not just like we have one cornerback who's kind of lousy, and now Earl Thomas can go kind of help that guy. The person who's supposed to be doing the helping is gone. So that is very I believe, like, when we didn't have Earl Thomas, we gave up something like an average of 34 points a game. That sounds bananas to me. But we were really – and that was back when we had Richard Sherman and healthy Bobby Wagner, healthy K.J. Wright. By the way, having Bobby Wagner back, that's big. That guy is good. But anyway – so this is quite disconcerting, because our defense is, I think, going to have some real probs.
Yeah, it's just really, it's a bummer just seeing, like you kind of keep saying, the team just seems to be moving in the wrong direction. Even though, I mean, if you look at our season so far, we're moving in the right direction as far as wins and losses are concerned. Went 0-2, and now we're 2-2. But, like, when you look at the factors that go into that, and the teams we're playing, and the team that we beat on Sunday, and then, you know, everybody's saying, yeah, the very first words out of everybody's mouth after that game was costly win. Like, yeah, okay, we improved our record a tiny bit, but my God, what have we lost? And I know this is not meaningful football talk at all, but I didn't even make the connection until after I got done watching the game and I opened up Twitter that somebody pointed out, oh, yeah, this is in Arizona again. This is the same place that we lost. That we lost Richard Sherman and who went down with Richard Sherman in
Cam Chancellor.
Cam Chancellor Thursday ended his career Thursday Night Football last year. You and I believe were watching in Chicago when we were supposed to be at a public radio conference, if I recall.
That sounds right.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just. Boy, that game ended in a tie. This one we ended up winning. But, man, it's just like Arizona is the bleeding grounds for the Seahawks now.
Yeah, it was really a bummer. I'm really bummed about the Disley thing, which isn't getting as much press. Like, I had to really hunt and try to find. I guess they don't know if it's officially for the whole season. Here's one last thing. I think it's likely that it'll be the whole season. Although Disley, you got to love him. He got on Twitter this morning. And let's see if I can find this. Let's see. Okay, good. I got him. I like this guy a lot. He says, "Hey, just as I thought, the sun came up today!" Exclamation point!
Oh, wow,
that was Will Disley's tweet 8 hours ago.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I dig it. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
That's, I mean, what else can you do, right?
Yeah, I like that. That's a really good
now,
attitude.
Granted, he's not in the position Earl Thomas is in with the team, but let's just say that's the opposite of flipping the team off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's not even a fair comparison. Yeah, Disley's a rookie. He doesn't have any problem with the team. But here's one last quick thing, and then we should move on to the Browns because we got to get out of here soon. The Do you know Earl Thomas could be healthy in time for the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday, but I mean, thought that's
bizarre.
It's a weird take.
I can't see a universe in which we even go to the playoffs, let alone the Super Bowl, but would that not be the craziest thing if he ends up, if we go to the Super Bowl, which is, I mean, we have to be like, I mean, like, go put money on that in Vegas if you want to make some money, because I'm sure the odds are so long against that happening. And then if he were actually to be healthy in time for the Super Bowl, wouldn't that be just hilarious?
That would, and that he would still be with our team. Like, that also seems unlikely to me, right? If he's healthy by the Super Bowl, what are the chances that he'd even be playing for the Seahawks?
Right. I mean, the other thing is, now I guess, I'm criticizing the league for being mercenary, but now I'm going to suggest a mercenary thing. Damn, I wish we would have traded him.
Yeah. Well, that's what everybody, I mean, people were saying that early on. Like, I don't know, that, like, it just, the team should have just traded him. At least you get something from him. You know, he hates, I mean, it's just such a weird situation to be in. Like, he hates playing for you. He's openly doesn't want to play for you anymore. He has disregard and disrespect for the people that he's playing for. Maybe not his teammates, but the people that he's going out there risking it. He thinks he's literally risking his life and limb for people who don't appreciate him and don't pay him what he wants. Yet, like I say, I think that he acted like such an a-hole about everything. That's the third person I've called that today. You know, like, I could understand the reluctance as somebody leading a team to give in to these kind of jerky hardball tactics of another, of a player, because then you lose all credibility among other players. So I kind of understood the hardballness that Seattle was using approaching the situation. But, you know, from a practical standpoint, they probably should have just cut him. Got, you know, I think they wanted a second round pick. I could be wrong about that. I think they wanted a second round pick, couldn't get that. And so we're just like decided to use him as.
Why would
were.
You cut him? I mean,
to honestly, yeah, but I mean, they could have traded him for something less than. I think the thing is, they tried for second round, nobody bit, and so they just gave up. And he was effective. I mean, that's the funny thing. The games that he played, I mean, he was, you know, such a kind of a PR disaster for everything that was going on, and he decided he wasn't going to practice, et cetera, et cetera. But he was such a good player in the past three games.
Yeah. He was the, at least through the first, I think, two or maybe three games, he was the top-rated safety in the NFL.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
Ooh, two interceptions last week, I want to say. I could be wrong.
Yeah, he had four on the season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a bummer. You're right. I'm back to, okay, I'm agreeing that it's a kind of a, it's just sad because it's acrimonious.
Yeah, it really is a bummer.
I did make it the banner on my Twitter page, though, him flipping off the sidelines. I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah. And, oh, Le'Veon Bell tweet out, "Don't worry, brother, now I'm happy to be the," and I think he actually did say, "I'm happy to be the league asshole for everybody," or something like that.
Yeah, I did. I heard about it anyway. All right. Let's talk about the Browns if you are emotionally in a place where you can.
Honestly, I don't think they played this weekend, so, that's good.
It doesn't look like anything to you.
It doesn't look like anything to me. I was watching, you know, my go-to joke. I was watching God Friended Me. What the hell is with God Friended Me? I know that I keep on bringing that up in every text chain I went on with you. Every tweet has something to do with that. But I am just astounded that we live in an age where we are seeing a lot, you know, with The Good Place and other TV shows. I feel like there is something going on in our culture right now where people are going to kind of almost, turning to like afterlife-y kinds of shows and, you know, superpower and maybe even spiritual shows. But God Friended Me literally sounds like a show that would be a joke inside another show. Like, oh, yeah. Right. Oh, hey, Matt LeBlanc, I heard you got a job. Yeah, I'm, a lead part on a new show called God Friended Me. Like, that can't really exist.
God cop? Crime just got a new worst friend. What the hell is that?
Show I am very excited about. A New York City detective solves crimes with the help of his new partner, God.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
I'm reading the plot. God Friended Me is described as a humorous, uplifting series that explores questions of faith, existence, and science. It centers on Miles Hall, an outspoken atheist whose life is turned upside down when he is friended by God on Facebook. Unwittingly, he becomes an agent of change in the lives and destinies of those around him. This is like, you know what this is? This is like the updated version of Highway to Heaven.
Yeah. And wasn't there another religious one around in the...
Yeah, Touched by an Angel.
Touched by an Angel, yeah. I think of those. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so Browns. I guess they won. I don't know. God damn it. Like, it was just... I just don't know how many more ways to say this, but will you at least validate me when I come on the show every week and say... The Browns find new painful ways to lose so that we can't even grow a callus. We can't even, like, grow some sort of a blister to protect us from the losing. You're talking about, you know, I was saying that if you practice a lot on the football field, well, then maybe your body won't be as shocked when you hit another big guy during a game. Like, you'd be used to it by now. How are we not used to it? Because the Browns' losses are always, like, they are... Back to religion, I feel like there's a devil. There's some sort of a, like,
you feel
a
like Stephen, God unfriended you?
Yeah, there's some sort of a Stephen King-y, like, too clever devil who wants to hurt us in new imaginative ways, you know? This is Ted Danson on the Good Place. It is so freaking weird. Basically, the game in this case, not a perfect game, by the way. I'm not saying that the Browns played a perfect game and then had it taken away from them. Baker Mayfield, he did some good things, but he also turned over the ball 4 times. That's not usually a recipe for winning a football game, certainly, including a pick six, by the way. But the defense was good for most of the game. They held. I don't even believe.
Wasn't the pick six kind of not his fault, though?
That's right. It bounced off the hands of his receiver or maybe a different defense. I think it bounced off the hands of a different defender and then into the hands of another defender. But it was it was a game that we should have been winning. The defense held the defense Brady. Didn't allow any touchdowns, I want to say, until the fourth quarter. Or I should say offensive touchdowns, I think. Or certainly in the third quarter. So there were good things going on. And then we get to the point in the game that, of course, everybody's talking about, even on the national level. The Browns basically needed, in one play near the end of the game, all they needed to get was a first down, and essentially the game is over. All they needed was to get a first down.
They're up by 8 points.
Yep, and all they need to do is get that first down, and then take a victory formation and run out the clock. You don't even need any more plays, and they run the ball, and it looked to me like they got the first down. It was close, but unquestionably they got the first down. And then the referee spotted it in a weird place. I'm like, that is a very ungenerous spot for this ball. But then they bring out the chains and they measure it. And just by the very, very tip, it's clearly a first down. Even with the ungenerous spot, the Browns get the first down. The announcers are claiming the game is over. That's it. But because you're in the last 2 minutes of the game, after all this rigmarole of bringing out the chains and marking it on the field as a first down, which took a long time, then they get the chains off the field, and then they say, okay, now it's time for the official review. We got to bring the officials in from New York to look this over because we're within the 2 minutes of the game. And New York overturns it. They claim it's not a first down. It was a first down. The game was over.
I'm looking at it right now. It was a first down.
And that was with what I'm calling an ungenerous spot. That was when they spotted it, I believe, like half a yard back too far. Which I was already angry about. They overturn it in New York, so then the Browns punted away. Which I have not listened to any Cleveland sports radio yet. I recorded the post game show because I want to hear people bleed later, and I haven't really done much reading on it. I just kind of I got done with that game, like punched a wall, took out the garbage, and then came back in and watched the Seahawks in the sort of fugue state. But I didn't actually punch a wall. I wanted to. I was thinking about it, but I Genevieve was here. That would have been. You don't want to punch walls after a sports game in front of your significant other. That is not a good look. But I was feeling poison coursing through my veins. It was a very, very bad moment for me at the end of that Browns game. What happens is, if I were the Browns, I would have gone for it there. I mean, it was now 4th and 20. But they're on their own 20.
I mean,
so,
here's the thing.
If you give that up, you're screwed.
Hugh Jackson, I don't even blame them. I wanted to say that, I think the Seahawks almost lost the game because of not going for it at the 50. where then they punted and Dixon and it does an uncharacteristic thing where he punts it into the end zone. So now you've only gained 30 yards and like the next play they threw it for 30. Like, I think that teams should go for it way more. Genevieve and I agree on this. That being said, for the Browns in that situation, if you go for it and you get turned back, you've literally just handed Derek Carr the ball on the 20.
Yes.
I think that that would be probably overly aggressive.
And he still – yes, that would have been overly aggressive, but it's tempting because it's literally inches. Your defense, which starts the game really good, once again is flagging. Like the third quarter was actually the second half of the second quarter into the third and fourth quarter was kind of a mess for the defense. They were just blitzing every single time. Browns blitz and the Raiders throw it in the flat. The flat is basically anything that's like a short, like 5 to 6 yard pass, right?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. Every single time, Luke, it was the same play over and over and over. Browns blitz, they get off a short little pass for 5, 6, 7 yards. Browns blitz, another short little pass. Like every single time, and they just march down the field many times. So I don't know what was going on with the Browns defense at this point. They weren't seeing it for some reason. So anyway, the Browns kick the ball away here at the end of the game with 1 minute and 30-some seconds left. And, of course, the Raiders come back and they march down the field and they both get the touchdown and the two-point conversion. Now it's a tied game. Now we go into overtime. Oh. Browns lose the coin flip. Hold them off, though. The Raiders don't score on the first possession. Then the Browns get the ball, can't do anything with it. It might even have been a three and out. I could be wrong about that. And then the ball is back in the Raiders' hands, and they win it with a field goal. And all I kept saying over and over and over during that extra 25 minutes of football we got to watch was, this isn't happening. The game ended. Like, I kept on saying, like, it's like I feel like I'm in a movie where that's where the alternate reality began, where my life split into two. Like, somewhere right now there's Andrew who's doing no point conversion because he's super happy because obviously the Browns won and the game ended. Like, the game was over, Luke. The game was over. I know. Yeah. I'm repeating myself, but this is what I said for about 90 minutes yesterday during and after the game. Like, none of that even happened. The game was over. The devil in New York said, ha, 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 and like twisted the little ends of his mustache and decided that to keep the game going by just taking back what was already a bad call. Like, it was just, it's just insanity. Now the Browns need to play better football. The Raiders are 0-3. The Browns are looking decent. They made some mistakes yesterday, and the defense definitely started to sag, which was really dispiriting. But that was our game to win. Not unlike game two of the season, where the offense did a lot of things right, but our kicker, for some reason, just decided not to kick four kicks successfully. Like, it's just so weird. Yeah. It's a curse.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, though, that's like, yes, you're right. The team should play better, but you can't – I mean, if you give a team – an extra chance, as the officials did there, it's almost like, I mean, yes, the Cleveland ideally would have punted the ball and then they would have just like held them. That's how that's supposed to go. But I mean, NFL teams are, even shitty NFL teams are good at football. Everyone on the team is the best football player anyone of their friends knows. Like, so you give them an extra chance. It's very hard to beat a team when the officials give them extra tries.
There was also a moment, by the way, where the Browns, I don't know if you saw this or read about this, but there were four really bad calls in the game. I will say that two of them went against the Browns and two of them went the other way. But Beast Mode got really screwed at one point. He was running and he was just about to do his Beast Mode thing, like run over four different Browns and break these tackles. But they whistled the ball dead. They whistled the play dead, even though he wasn't down. You know how they're just trying to protect players by like blowing the whistle a little bit sooner and calling plays dead? Well, that works against Beast Mode's modus operandi. Beast modus operandi. like, he needs to, you know, that's how he does it. Like, he gets almost pulled down, but he just keeps trucking forward, and he breaks those guys off, or they bring him down, but he gets the first down. So it was unfair to them, but that was like a first quarter thing, and who knows where that run play ends up going if it's not blown dead. Even I was infuriated on Beast Mode's behalf for that. But then, much worse, I can't remember who it is, but a defensive Brown player knocks the ball out of Derek Carr's hands. He is standing. The ball hits the ground. It bounces. A Brown defender picks it up and is almost in the clear. He would just have to break one tackle that looks like he would have had a hand on it, have a handle on it, and it potentially would have been a touchdown for the Browns. They just called the play dead. It was a fumble that was recovered by the Browns that he could have run it into the end zone. They just called it dead. It was terrible officiating. Just terrible.
That's crazy. What was the? Did they have any rationale for it? Were the announcers freaking out?
They were. They weren't freaking out, but they, you know, they didn't equivocate. They just said that is a fumble. I mean, they were kind of laughing about it. They're showing it again. They're like, this doesn't make any sense. They're like, that is a fumble. That's a fumble and probably a touchdown. It was bizarre, man. It was really rough.
I'm sorry, man. That really sucks.
It was one of those days. I remember there was one day last season. I mean, after all the losses, who knows like what my breaking point was. But I remember one time last year just being like so mad that I wanted to like burn all of my my Browns t-shirts. This time, I mean, I guess I wasn't as mad at the Browns. Like they, you know, there's reason to be upset at the Browns for not winning that. But I was mostly just mad at I wanted to burn all of my black and white striped shirts. I guess is what I'm saying yesterday. I didn't know what to do with all of my anger. I was so upset.
I'm sorry, dude. Barry and I were in this bar and they couldn't get the Browns game on, because the Seahawks game actually ended before the Browns game. They couldn't get it on the TV. So we're just like looking at our phones, which didn't have the like actual footage of the game, but it was just like that weird little cartoon of like a pass being thrown.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like dying on your behalf. And we were just both like, oh man. This is not Walsh's. Actually, what happened was when it went to overtime, I drove back to the condo and then I like streamed it on Reddit and then saw the end and I just was like,
so you did see you saw the end, but you didn't see the turnover.
I actually did see the end,
or you didn't see the.
I didn't.
The
yeah,
first
I just saw. I saw basically that I saw overtime or most of mm-hmm. overtime. Anyway, I'm sorry, man. That really sucks. They scored 42 points.
That's the other thing, too. I mean, it was such a high-scoring game.
Are there any positives? And you don't have to say yes. Like, I'm not trying to force you to. Is there any silver lining? Is there anything like the fact that they scored 42 points?
Well, I think Baker Mayfield, I mean, aside from the turnovers, like you say, not all of which are necessarily his fault. Like, he's a rookie. This is his very, very first start. I'm just befuddled because they seem to have the pieces. Jarvis Landry is a good receiver. Now, there were some dropped balls. I guess this isn't answering your question because I'm going negative again. But, like, it seems like, I think Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback who's going to potentially become a great quarterback. I really believe that, and I'm glad he didn't start the first two games this year or the first three games this year. But I don't think that he's going to be broken by putting him in too early. Like, I think he can take this team take this team over, and I think they can have some success. I love Callaway. I can't think of his name, the young rookie, Antonio Callaway, maybe.
Yeah.
Jarvis Landry is really fun. Both of those guys are dropping too many balls, though, and I think that might have to do with I don't know enough about the details of football, but it may have to do with Baker Mayfield throwing that ball at a cannon velocity in almost every situation. Like, it's he's just like,
yeah.
I know that you're trying to get in some tight windows. You must need velocity in some cases. And I haven't heard any announcers say anything about it, but like, he's firing every single ball like it's out of a cannon and it's bouncing off of people's chests. I think he needs to learn a little bit of finesse.
Yeah, that will probably come with time. I think that's something that he can develop, because he's obviously has a really pretty strong arm. And he's, even that first game he played, I remember him like throwing one off of Jarvis Landry, just like bouncing it off of him super fast. He'll probably throw that pass different in the coming seasons.
They
have next week.
We're playing the Ravens. I really hate the Ravens. I really want to beat the Ravens. God, I want to beat the Ravens. They will be wearing their Color Rush uniforms again. I know that. The Browns' Color Rush uniforms actually are not as bad as most of the league's. They're actually kind of menacing looking. And because they're dark orange and brown, very Halloween-y for this Trucktober. So that's good. I really want to beat the Ravens. I don't know if they will, but the Ravens are tied for the top of the division right now. Probably, I guess, 3-1 with the Bengals. I'm kind of making that up, but it seems like an educated guess. And of course, the Steelers are going to have to deal with what we're dealing with all season, the other team in our division, because they also have a tie on their record as well. So Brown sucking it up at the bottom of the AFC North again, but could maybe take out the Ravens next week. I will pray on that.
I said in the family text chain in Hawk Squad, I said, like, during the game, when Disley went down, I said, dear God, let Disley not be seriously hurt. And then, like, 25 other texts go by, and then my dad, it does my heart good to hear my children pray, no matter the cause. Nerd emoji, smiling emoji.
Oh, my God. Now, that's funny to me, because I think that sometimes people who truly, truly religious people, they don't like it when you kind of, you know, pray for sports. You know, my dad likes sports, but we would talk about. Right. Or do you think your dad was just kind of teasing and leasing a little bit?
I think he was. He was joking. He okay. The emojis told me that he was joking.
I see.
Seahawks have the Rams next week. My goodness gracious! I don't see it. It's a home game. I don't see a universe in which we can beat the Rams, particularly without Earl Thomas or Will Disley. But I mean, I don't know. You know, weird things happen. All of the indications are that we're going to get steamrolled, but, you know, you never know. I mean, if by some bizarre chance...
We're just through nap time.
I know, sorry. If by some bizarre chance we somehow beat the Rams, it'd be kind of interesting, because we would be 3-2, and we would have a game on the Rams. I don't know. I don't know. Do you think there's any chance the Seahawks could win?
Yeah, you got to. I'm predicting wins for our teams every single week this year.
Oh, I forgot. I'm talking to a Browns fan.
Yeah. No, I mean, what are you going to do? I'm gonna say that by some weird ass thing, the Seahawks are going to win next week, and the Browns are going to beat the Ravens, and we're just going to have
nice.
It's going to be such a happy Monday. It's going to be. It's almost going to be embarrassing. We're going to be so happy.
I'm not going to yawn one time during next
Monday
show.
Yeah. The good news is
slam dunk pointers and 360s.
The good news is I don't have to do it. This year, you know, I've been putting together for the past 3 years this Browns Seahawks side by side schedule. And last year, I'm pretty sure there was only one game where they were playing simultaneously, where I had to do this thing where I was, you know, streaming the Browns game and then taping the Seahawks. I did that yesterday. I'm going to have to do that 4 more times this year. That's a bummer. Luckily, 3 more times this year, 4 in total.
Ooh.
Next week, it looks, though, like we're back to more of a regular schedule where I can watch the Browns in the Ravens game probably at the Browns bar with some friends and then rush home and watch the Seahawks. Color rush home and watch the Rams. So let's hope that everything goes. Oh, by the way, I think you would have liked my setup. So I had to stream the Browns game using some clever internet resources that are not paid for. I had told you that you have to be careful because they'll give game updates, score updates from the other games
right.
around the league along the bottom. So I had to tape 2 pieces of newspaper together, kind of fold them so that they were kind of long, and then I taped it perfectly to the bottom of my TV screen so you could just see the timeout, how many timeouts were left, but you wouldn't have the Seahawks game spoiled. But, man, it is really a tough – I think I want to stick with it. I still think it's better than trying to watch 2 games simultaneously because I just wouldn't really get the gist of in the rhythm of either game. But it really does make watching the second game not that fun. And also having to like not – a big part of watching sports is that I can be on the text chain with
yes.
you and the gang. That you can be – when you're screaming at your TV, you can open Twitter and see other people screaming at the officials or whatever. So having to kind of lock up the phone in the other room to avoid spoilers and then watching the Seahawks game – on tape delay in kind of a vacuum where you're not interacting
right.
with anybody and everybody in your life already knows what happens. It's not exactly the best, especially coming off such a horrible loss like that. I mean, I was just
right.
like, I was trying to explain to you before the show, like, I love the Seahawks. I really do. Like, I don't consider them a second team. I feel like I have 2 teams, but it was just really hard to get my head and the heart into the Seahawks game when I just wanted to burn everything down, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry that you had to go through that. And you're right. It's like not a good – half of the fun is the is the talking to people about the game and kind of being with people either literally or virtually. I have to say, as shitty as the Seahawks played in a lot of elements and as much of a bummer as it was to see two of our super important players get hurt for the season, when Seabass, and as much shit as we were talking about Seabass, when he hit that field goal and we were in Three Finger Jacks, which is a terrible name for a bar, in Winthrop, it was so celebratory. It was like almost the whole thing was almost worth it.
That's great. Yeah. And I love those feelings. And so hopefully maybe I'll get that with the Browns at the Browns bar on Sunday. You should come down.
Yeah. Maybe I will. Maybe I will. All right. Let's wrap things up here. Thanks for listening. We made it to 2 hours, so that's something.
Hey.
I don't know if I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's something.
Right.
I'm not assigning a value to it.
It's not nothing.
I know what we do. We play Bad Finger no matter what.
And we'll keep I like
the Mitt Romney drop.
Yep.
And me too, just because it involves not having to think of new things.
Right. And I do as for both of our teams this year, I think no matter what is just kind of a good song to go out with.
It's a good anthem. It's a good theme. So thanks for listening, everybody. And you ready, my friend?
I'm ready. Got it dialed up.
Okay, here we go. Here comes Mitt. Oh, whoops. Sorry, I had Mitt muted. Here we go. Here is Mitt.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Power out.